Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
An Erios original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst-case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith,
and I am
the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest disasters and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Capron Funicular Disaster. Here's what you need to know. Capron is a quaint village in Austria, located 60 miles southwest of Salzburg. It is a popular destination for skiers and snowboarders, thanks to the towering slopes of the local Kitzsteinhorn Mountain. In 1974, a funicular railway was built to transport skiers from Capron to Kitzsteinhorn, which is a type of cable railway that connects two points on a steep slope. The two cars move in concert, one ascending while the other one descends. In 1993, the Capron Funicular was updated to give the train cars a sleeker, futuristic look.
The system is ingenious but simple. There are two trains, each one balancing the other. As one climbs its twin across the tunnel, descends.
The first unusual thing I noticed was the smoke. It was like a cigarette that you put down for a moment.
Smoke from the cab starts to seep into the rest of the car. Passengers grow concerned, then agitated. There are no smoke alarms to alert either the train attendant or the control room.
The modernized railway was 3,900 meters long, or 12,800 feet, and 3,300 meters, or 10,800 feet of the track, was inside a tunnel. The trains had no engines or fuel tanks, not even a driver. There was merely one attendant at the front of the train who operated the hydraulic doors. On November 11th, 2000, an electric fan heater caught fire in an unattended cab at the back of the ascending train. About 600 yards into the tunnel, the train came to a sudden halt. The pipes carrying hydraulic fuel from the brake system had been melted by the fire, thus triggering the train's safety feature. The passengers closest to the fire had no way of contacting the attendant about the escalating fire. By the time the attendant realized the train was on fire, he tried to open the doors, but the loss of hydraulic pressure caused the doors to malfunction. of the 167 passengers on board, 12 were able to escape after breaking a window and traveling down past the fire and out of the tunnel. Dozens of people were already unconscious due to the toxic fumes. The attendant was eventually able to open the hydraulic doors, and the passengers who were still able to flee ran out of the burning train, but many made a fatal mistake. At that point, the tunnel was functioning like a chimney, sucking the oxygen from the opening at the bottom and sending the toxic fumes and smoke rapidly up to the top of the tunnel. Of the passengers who managed to get out, most of them ran up the tunnel, away from the fire. The train's attendant also followed suit. Not a single one of them made it out of the tunnel alive. Fun facts, aka death stats. A total of 155 people died in the Capron funicular disaster. Among them were 92 Austrians, 37 Germans, 10 Japanese, 8 Americans, 4 Slovenes, 2 Dutch, 1 person from the Czech Republic, and 1 from Great Britain. Entire families were lost in the disaster, including many young people and children. Several bodies were burned beyond recognition and were only identifiable using DNA from toiletries in their hotel rooms. Of the 161 passengers and one attendant on board the ascending car, only 12 people survived. The attendant and single passenger on the descending car also died from the toxic smoke in the tunnel. 3 people who had been in the Alpen Center at the top of the railway were unable to escape in time and died of asphyxiation. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello, hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi, everyone.
And our very special guest is our friend, actor, comedian, dancer, Vegas superstar, and host of the Side Hustle podcast, Sarah Lowe.
Well, hello.
Yes.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, this is my best podcast voice. Hello, I'm a host of a podcast.
Pretty convincing.
No one's ever going to listen to it now.
Okay, disqualified. Sarah, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your show?
The Side Hustle podcast is co-hosted with me and Chelsea Phillips Reed. We are two performers in Las Vegas. Chelsea is the MC of Magic Mike Live, and I perform in the Atomic Saloon show as well as Absinthe, both Spiegel World shows here in Las Vegas. And we decided to start a podcast about jobs, not just any jobs, the jobs that you have to do while getting the jobs you want to do, mostly showbiz jobs. So we've all, you know, especially us performers coming up in the biz, have had to do, I don't know, cater waitering, bar and bat mitzvahs, just the weirdest, wackiest jobs, and there's always a good story behind it. So we love having friends on and different people in the industry and just kind of interviewing them and finding out what their weirdest, wildest, wackiest side hustle is.
It's a really great show, and I really recommend it to our listeners. Especially, I love to listen to it to kind of like get, I just feel like I'm in Vegas. Like I'm getting the inside scoop of everything that is happening, you know, behind the glitz and glamour of, you know, Vegas.
Can you hear the slot machines jingling in the background during your entire podcast?
Yeah, yeah. We make sure we do it on a casino floor. That's good. Yeah, we can't get enough. Yeah, I mean, Vegas does particularly have some of the wildest side hustles because there's always a convention center gig or there's just these really extra. I mean, there's extravagantly wealthy people everywhere. But because it's Vegas and, you know, quote unquote, the entertainment capital of the world, it ends up that we have like, you know, a child's birthday party, a one-year-old's birthday party that is like just children. And Chelsea had to go and she was supposed to play Dorothy, but the person who hired her didn't realize it was for a one-year-old. And so she was in a sexy Dorothy costume.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like things like that where she's like in, you know, a Legs Avenue tiny skirt with 1-year-olds who can barely walk, just, you know, looking up.
Bless, bless.
Yeah.
So we like to start off our show by asking our guests, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is keeping you up at night?
I mean, how long is this podcast?
It's about an hour, so.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you can't go on and on. Like, your answer has to be, like, kind of just one small thing. Like, it can't
okay.
be.
Okay. Keeping me up at night. Literally, the fires. They are, you know, there are no fires here in Las Vegas, but our skies are covered with them because they, you can't see. You can't even see the strip from my house, and it's not that far.
It's humble just brag.
Or not. You don't want to live near this town. More like, give me money so I can move away. No, and so like my husband and my children and everybody's allergies are just like this awful. So that it keeps me up at night, like as the world is catching on fire, like global warming, but it also keeps me up at night because then nobody can breathe. So my husband's like snoring and then my son needs a breathing treatment. And so I actually can't sleep at night either.
Wow. Oh. That is...
Yeah.
Nobody's ever answered that question, what keeps you up at night, with an actual literal answer of what actually keeps you
up
at
night. Yes, but also like bigger, you know, it was macro and micro.
Macro and micro.
And I really applaud you. That was beautiful.
Personal and professional. It was.
I feel like she also really like is handing you the perfect baton, Rebecca.
I know. Yes. I'm going to mess this up. I'm going to mess this up.
No, you're not.
Okay.
I have faith in you.
And, you know, the fires are just, it's a perfect segue into this terrible disaster that was actually consumed by fire. Thank you.
You did it.
Thank
Don't
you,
panic.
I did. You
did a great job.
Going. I know. It was going too well.
The point of segueing is to go on to the next subject.
But you know what? I started thinking about that it was a great segue that I was doing, and then I was thinking about what a terrible disaster it was. And I think that's why I get these segues are not bad, are not good. Because I start thinking, it's just one of these disasters that will keep you up at night and will, there was so much that went wrong, and the idea of being stuck somewhere with impending doom is just so terrifying to me. And what these people must have gone through, I can't imagine. So let's start by first discussing, what is a funicular? How does it work? Because
speaking of a segue,
I could not understand. It took me a little while to understand what this kind of device was. So
it also took me a minute to understand how to pronounce it.
Yes, it took me a Google search, actually.
Same.
Rebecca's one of those repeat customers of the how to pronounce this on YouTube, like, you know, where they have words.
I keep the lights on over there at howtopronounce.com.
Yeah. Well, but at least like you speak two languages. I've only ever spoken English, and I still also keep the lights on over there. I don't think it sounds right. Yeah.
So this is according to RideTheIncline.com, and how it works is conventional trains using steel wheels on a steel track could never efficiently climb a track as steep as most funicular railways. Steel wheels are used to decrease rolling resistance, which improves the efficiency of trains on flat ground, but would hinder their ability to get traction up steep slopes. The incline railway and funicular railways in general solve this problem by pulling trains up steep grades with a cable. With this cable, the steel wheels don't need to have traction, but can be used primarily to guide the train along the tracks. The funicular railway is made even more efficient by counterbalancing two train cars on the same track and using the weight of one to help pull the other up the mountain. The incline has two cars that ride on the same single-mile-long track. When the cars come close together, the track splits into two as a passing loop for both cars to pass one another. The single track passing loop system is used in funicular railways across the world. So I can already tell Sarah's still confused.
I am too. I'm a visual learner, yeah. So I'm going to have to look this up.
I heard on a podcast someone explain it a way that I understood. So it's like if you throw a rope over a tree branch, right?
Okay.
And you put two weights on that branch. If you pull one side of the rope, if you pull one side of the rope down, the other one will go up, right? Mm. And then if you pull that one that's up down, the one to the left is going to go up, if that makes sense. Mm.
And I think it's weight related,
yes,
too, right? So it's like you're basically using it's like efficient in the sense that it's pulling itself. Like it's not, you're not having to produce a ton of energy to get it up the mountain.
Copy. So both cars would have to have a similar amount of weight.
Yeah.
And they move simultaneously. So they're on one track. Like they're always going to be moving at the same time. They can't stop
now independently. Now I know what you're talking about. I've seen that. I've seen it in action.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were both. Yeah, they're both relying on one going up and one going down.
Yeah, they're connected. So what is the difference between a funicular and a cable car, right? Because when you think of skiing, you think of cable cars up in the air. This is different. Mm. This is an actual train. A cable car is superficially similar to a funicular, but differs from such a system in that its cars are not permanently attached to the cable and can stop independently, whereas funicular cars that are permanently attached to the propulsion cable, which is itself stopped and started.
Okay.
Whereas a funicular has cars that are permanently attached. Okay. So there were a couple of ways to make it up to the top of the mountain in this particular ski, you know, slope. One was by cable car, which took 13 minutes. The other option was the 9-minute funicular train ride. So many chose this option because it got you there 4 minutes earlier.
And if you want to be the first on the slope that day, every minute counts.
I mean, that's, you know, typical American. I need to go first. How do I get there faster? Give it to me now.
It's interesting, yes, because this was, again, this was in Austria. So
yes, I'm aware of it. As I said it, I was like, this isn't America. But perhaps I feel like it
just had to say it.
As I said it, I realized it was another A. It just
wasn't. It is typical of Americans, maybe not in this instance.
Yeah.
I guess it's typical of Austrians as well.
Ahead and say Austrians do this as well.
Yes.
Great.
And in all likelihood, if we're looking for a pattern, probably Australians and Afghanistani as well.
Thank you.
Anything with an
Australia?
A?
Australians probably are more guilty.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We'll fact check that.
All of Asia.
I'll get into that. All of Asia.
Mm-hmm. Anything with an A. So we could start off by, you know, ski fever, putting ski fever up on the board, which we will actually come back to. But for now, let's just say perhaps ski fever. Now, let's talk about a little bit of a timeline for what happened on November 11th of 2000. So it's 8:57 a.m. The train arrives at the station. People shuffle in. Amongst them is a ski club from Germany and also a part-time volunteer firefighter happens to be in the crew. His name is Erwin Goetz. At 9 a.m., the train sets off to the tunnel. And seconds into the train ride, a passenger in the back cab spots a weird smell. So it smelled like smoke that was coming from the rear attendant's cab. There's no attendant inside that cab. The only attendant in the whole train is in the front cab. Okay. Mm. So this is key. The smoke eventually starts to enter the passenger cab, and as it gets worse, people start panicking inside. So if you think about it, there's different cabs in this funicular train. Kind of like, you know, when you get on an airport train shuttle between terminals, Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like that, but it's going steep. It's very steep incline. So people are panicking. There are no smoke alarms. There are no intercoms or radios in the cabs. There was no way to contact for help.
I think it's worth noting that just after you saying all of that it is the year 2000.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Clayton. I was going to say, we're not talking about something that was old-timey. We're talking about 21 years ago, like in our lifetime. So maybe not me because I'm 21.
it was like the day after you were born.
Yeah, you're like a little baby, but like still.
Fetus. But I was still sad about it. But no, I just, that is upsetting.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
We have made these mistakes before.
Right.
So many times.
And what's even more upsetting, which we'll talk about in 1 second, is that we had cell phones. Cell phones were already a thing. Okay, but we digress. We're talking about timelines here. We're learning about timelines.
Okay.
Suddenly, the train stopped inside just after they entered the tunnel. Mm-hmm. The attendant up at the front was confused. He had no idea what was happening in the back because he couldn't see, and he couldn't communicate with the passengers inside the back cab. When the control room calls the attendant, he told them that he didn't know what was going on. Okay? So let's
not
just...
Not okay.
So let's pause and let's put a lack of safety mechanisms and protocols up on the board. Because...
Sorry, go ahead, Sarah.
No, do you think that they ever had like a... Hey, let's just have like a drill. Like, did they ever run...
a fire drill? No.
A fire drill, like any drill. Like, hey, let's just say somebody gets sick or something happens. Or like, how do we get in touch with each other? Or how do we let the cars know what's happening? No, no, we're just,
It'll be fine. We'll figure it out in the moment.
It's Austria.
well, how big is the car?
The cab the that cab? They're in.
Because there's attendant at the front of it?
Yeah.
Okay, but not one in the back.
Yes, and these are, the cabs are not... are like separate from the attendant
like
cars.
Car. All right. Yeah. Let me look into how big
there's,
the car
I believe
was.
There wasn't even a window where he could see, but even if there was a window, he would have only been able to see the cab that was up in the front. The fire though started in the bottom or in the back of the train. So he wouldn't have been able to see it even if there was a window from the attendant.
Is there an attendant car in the back as well?
Like, there is.
Cause the back turns into the front, right?
At
a certain point.
There is an attendant car in the back, but there was no attendant inside of it. And that is where the actual fire starts coming from.
God, if only it had been in that top cat, you know, and they were all able to go the other way.
I know. Like, that's a sucky thing to think about. Okay, so there's no fire regulations for the specific design of car because it wasn't motorized and was believed to be fireproof. Oh, so, this is a problem. Like, this is a problem.
I also sell fireproof cabin train cars. Would you like this? It's a cardboard. Yes, but just go with me. It is fireproof.
We can believe everything to be fireproof until fire just obliterates it.
Yeah. It's true.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like fires, nothing has ever stopped a fire.
No.
Right. Water can put it out.
But even
like
that,
a fire.
Even that, you need an exorbitant amount of water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can light a fire on top of water.
No,
you put chemicals on water and you light that stuff, it's burning.
It's just never say anything is fireproof and don't say anything is unsinkable. And don't say anything can't fall down from the sky.
Keep your damn mouth shut.
Yeah. Just don't say anything.
Don't.
And this kind of, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit and put up on the board, because this is falling into a listener suggestion we had. And this is coming from Kelly Shaddle. Kelly Shadle, maybe? And they say, Pompeian reassurance is definitely to blame for this one. Believing that something can't happen because it hasn't happened in the past is all sorts of messed up. If they had a better if they had been better prepared for a fire and had better safety features in place, this tragedy could have had a different outcome. So Pompeian reassurance. It's kind of like, I think that's a really fun way of saying like human ego or, you
sure.
know.
Hubris?
Yes.
Hubris.
Man's
yeah.
hubris.
Human's hubris, Chris. We're humans.
It's the exact what could go wrong. It's that yep. thought, you know. That's yeah. like, I don't know, lots of things.
You know, this is, Sarah's a mom. It's just like, and I'm not a mom, but I'm a woman, and I feel like I don't know. I'm sure there are men out there, Clayton, you also kind of tend to think this way, but we're always thinking of everything that can go. Oh, Chris feels a little left out.
Go ahead. You finish your thought.
I'm just saying we're thinking about what could go wrong. It's mm-hmm. like we are thinking about what could go wrong. Chris,
we should all enter every situation thinking, what am I going to do when something tries to kill me in this particular place?
Not absolutely. According to Rebecca, I don't. I just walk along the street with like with my
you're
eyes
the one
closed,
kill us.
Like sort
you're
of just we... like walking into oncoming traffic, like no, whistling right. and waving you're at people right. and just like jump off bridges like willy-nilly, I guess. I mean,
no,
I don't
right,
know
Chris.
What kind of world I live in that she leaves me out of that. She's like, well, moms, me, and Clayton, yeah. we all really think about like what could go wrong. But like someone like Chris, for example,
but
like I have tap dance practice on the roof, like routinely. So
sure.
like
you, I think it's actually a compliment. You know, you don't think what could go wrong. You think what could go right.
Aww,
you know?
That's nice.
That's sweet.
It takes a real brave soul to tap dance on a roof.
Not recommended, people.
Yeah, just a no. ham, actually. I'm just a ham. I just like to show my moves off to the neighbors.
Chris is included in this. But I just want to read something from Rail System. And they said, the unit had its fire extinguishers out of the passenger's reach in the sealed attendance compartments. No smoke.
Sealed?
Yeah. No smoke detector existed on board. The passengers had no method of contacting the attendant. Professor Joseph Neges, a funicular train expert, said that the design throughout the years had a perception that a fire could not occur since no fire had occurred in a funicular cabin prior to the Caprun disaster. So also, there was no sprinkler systems inside the tunnel. And they to put out which could have put out the flames. There was no fireproof emergency refuge or an evacuation tunnel through which the passengers might have escaped. There are also conflicting reports about whether the train's door remains closed, remained closed, sealing the passengers into the burning train. So there was no way to open the doors.
Just a friendly reminder, it's still the year 2000.
Yep, yep.
You talked about cell phones. You talked about how is there not a fire extinguisher readily available in every cab?
Yes. Mm. That would have been solved with a quick drill like you had recommended earlier.
And how is there not in a train tunnel a sprinkler system that somebody
right.
wasn't like mandated to be installed?
Or a fire alarm or a smoke detector? A smoke yeah. detector.
A smoke.
Because someone said it wasn't, these things are fireproof.
It's fireproof.
So we don't have to do that.
And
stuff.
And their main reason for saying that was because it wasn't operated by an engine. Is that what I'm to understand? Like, that's why they really thought it was not going to light on fire?
Yeah. And because, well, yeah.
So, I mean.
Right. Like, what? Because it didn't have an engine, does it also the
no gasoline
steel that it was made of not fireproof? Does it?
And the biggest liability here is people.
Yes.
Just because the train is not like you think it's not going to catch on fire, that doesn't
and
mean some bozo walks
yeah.
on with a lighter or a cigarette or whatever mm-hmm. and starts a fire.
Or what if a liar came in, liar, and his pants
and
suddenly
his pants
go on
are on fire,
fire.
Totally
yeah.
on fire. And Chris would have walked right in. You know,
yes, Chris doesn't look around when
I don't.
I literally don't.
I put on my blinders on, and I'm literally walking around
with your eyes closed.
With my eyes
yeah.
closed.
Yeah.
Into any bad
you need
situation.
To be careful.
talking to the liar, asking him questions.
I routinely nap on the stove while it's on.
He sat next to the pants on fire.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, bro, your pants. Where'd you get them?
Cool pants. Those pants. Those pants are fire.
No,
those
pants are lit.
So let's put a few things up on the list that will go quickly. Double-paned windows. Inside the train, people tried to break open the windows with their ski poles, but they were double-paned, which made it much harder, right? So once people inside started trying to open the doors, there was no emergency release, and it wasn't until 9:08 that the attendant finally realized that there was a fire, and he called the control room. So this is it. The train left at 9. It's been 8 minutes, and someone started spotting the smoke right away, right seconds after the train started, went on its way.
It was already too late.
It was too late. Let's also put up on the board a blackout. So this is according to railssystem.net. The train conductor, who was in the cabin at the upper end of the train, which was the front since the train was ascending, realized a fire had broken out, reported it to the control center, and attempted to open the hydraulically operated train doors. But the system pressures, the system pressure loss prevented them from operating. The train conductor then lost contact with the control center because the fire burned through a power cable running the length of the track, causing a total blackout inside this tunnel. There were no emergency lights even.
So somebody just dug a tunnel and was like, this is good.
Put a train in it.
We're ready.
That's what it feels like. I mean...
And why did it stop? Did it stop because of the fire? Why didn't we keep going through the did the conductor stop it? Because I think I'm confused a little bit because I thought once it was going, it didn't stop.
So the conductor did not stop it manually. It stopped because of the fire.
I see.
It just
because it had the hydraulic fluid had leaked out, and when it lost that pressure, the train apparently did have some safety protocol, so it just stopped itself because it was like, oh, the brake fluid is gone, so we should stop in case this gets out of control.
It had a safety feature.
Yeah.
So there another thing because up on the board. I mean,
the concern is that it's going to go too fast, and that's it. That's the only thing that can go wrong. When they sold the train car, they were like, listen, it's fireproof. And they were like, but... speed proof, and they're like, good question.
Good call. We'll put that those hydraulics on.
Fixed, done. Put it in this freshly dug out tunnel with no
lights or sprinklers. Jesus. No cell phone, no cell reception. We can put that up on the board. Right. It's 2000, so some of the passengers did have cell phones on the train. Unfortunately, because the train had stopped inside the tunnel, there was no cell reception. Those stuck inside the train couldn't even use their phones to call for help.
I mean, we had cell phones. It was early days of cell phones.
Yes, it was like you had a Nokia. You had that flat, small Nokia.
And if you were in Austria skiing, you probably, I mean, this is an assumption, but you probably had some kind of access. I mean, so you probably had like a better Nokia phone. It wasn't just like the crappy one from... whatever that you got handed down to you. It's like a new phone, so you'd hope it'd work really well.
But I don't know, what do you call them, towers? How do phones work?
Yeah,
how do cell phones work?
They bounce off towers, but there is no like infrastructure like there is today.
No.
You're not like getting 5G reception.
Nope.
Wired in.
They might not have even had cell like on the mountain.
Yes,
that's true. Bad case. I can't imagine the panic and fear that these people must have felt inside these cabs, knowing that there was an emergency and they couldn't call for help, and that it was the smoke was coming in.
No, and that is part of the things that we teach that was taught to us that we teach our kids, which is like, you know, okay, you call for help. Here's what you do in an emergency. And one of the first things we always do is call for help. So there's no possible way to call for help. Then you're in an immediate panic already.
Yes. Oh, God.
Sarah, in your shows that you do in Vegas, do you guys have fire drills for the theaters?
That's a great question. It's basically like on the training. For example, like I wasn't hired in the original company. So when you come in, you are taught, like they do a talk through fire and safety drills, but also safety drills include like there are like apparatuses that hang from the ceiling. So there's like all sorts of fire and safety drills. And you know, that's just a great point, Chris. Like anytime you go anywhere, and I hate to say this to you because I know that you like living on the edge and just flailing wildly.
I just don't care. And I don't think about anything that could bring me danger.
But in a theater, you should know where all of the exits are when you come in case there is said fire or some kind of emergency, you know where to go right away.
I've heard that some losers live their life like that, but not me. If I happen to see a fire exit, I sort of scramble it out of my mind really quick.
Cool. Well, okay. We need to put up the tunnel, a.k.a. the stairway to hell, up on the board. Yeah. This is one of the worst parts. Yeah, this is one of the worst parts of this tragedy. So this is according to The Independent. Experts say that the skiers fell victim to the chimney effect, a whirlwind of fire and smoke rising rapidly from below. Franz Schausberger, the governor of Salzburg province, said that the blaze spread at a raging speed like a chimney. Opening the doors in such an emergency would have been suicidal. It would have created a draft, fanning the flames and enveloping the top section of the tunnel in dense smoke. Rescuers say that the only possible escape route turned into a stairway to hell. A great many of the bodies were found not inside the train, but on the stairs above the carriages. The passengers tried to run, but they were overtaken by smoke. Since the train was designed as fireproof, the fire gate fitted at both ends of the tunnel did not have to close automatically. Such a system triggered by smoke detectors would have prevented the chimney effect and choked off the flames' oxygen supply. Fire doors are used in many other tunnels and also in funicular railway tracks, similar to cap rooms. But this Alpine Metro had no serious mishaps since 1974. And I'm going to go on. Railsystems.net says the passengers by this stage, aware of the fire and unable to exit through the doors, attempted to smash the break-resistant acrylic glass in order to escape. 11 passengers from the rear of the train who successfully broke a window followed the advice of another escaped passenger who had been a volunteer firefighter. This is that guy Getz. For 20 years and traveled downward past the fire and below the smoke. Many of the still trapped occupants had by now lost consciousness due to the toxic fumes. Eventually, the conductor was able to unlock the doors, allowing them to be manually forced open by the remaining conscious passengers, who spilled out into the tunnel and fled upwards and away from the fire. The tunnel acted like a giant chimney, sucking oxygen from the bottom and rapidly sent the poisonous smoke, heat, and fire itself billowing upwards. All the passengers ascending on the foot, as well as the train conductor, were asphyxiated by the smoke and then burned by the raging fire. So it was the 11 who went down, and I'll tell you why this is so crazy. In order to go downhill, you had to pass the fire. If you went up or down, that decision seemed to be a life or death decision.
Right.
Yeah. The trick, what was going on was that going up meant that you were going away from the fire toward the Alpen Center, which was a commerce area. So that's where I would have naturally headed towards.
Yeah.
Going down meant that you had to go past the fire, walk towards this steep mountainside, and risk the possibility of the train breaking away from the cable and falling towards you.
It's basically a counterintuitive decision you had to make, just basically because if somebody was there to tell you why, like this firefighter or some sort of person who was there to look after people's safety in that way, then they would have known better. But you're right. It is sort of counterintuitive to go toward the fire, but that would be the only way that people would survive.
Yeah.
Well, and at that point, you're so... we are looking for somebody to tell us what to do, right? Yeah. Your brain is so crazy that the minute somebody says, you know, go this way, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like. And apparently the volunteer firefighter did try to convince people to follow him, to go down with him.
Mm. And 11 people did?
11 people did.
Wow.
But many, I even heard that the person who was able to break the window, that person who got the window open, ended up and was in the cab with the firefighter, ended up going up versus going down.
Well, then there's the other. I mean, we know he's a volunteer firefighter now because we're reading about it.
Right.
But in the moment, how is he, first of all, going to sell the fact that he knows better? In a split second, you have to convince somebody.
Yeah.
And then convince them to follow you in a life or death scenario. It must have been. And then I'm sure you're also, you know, battling, you know, what you probably can't see anything. You're having trouble breathing, obviously. Yeah. I mean, it's just, what a nightmare.
Yeah, but if he's like, my name is John Getz and I Getz it. Now get with the program and follow me.
There you go.
I think he was Irwin.
I'm a volunteer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Irwin
That's the
Getz.
Hollywood version.
Yeah. If you want to get with the program, yes. Getz on board.
And in that scenario, you call yourself John. It's a more convincing sort of hero name, I think, than Irwin, I think. So just call
Split
yourself
second
John.
Decisions
like Sarah,
you have to make
Sarah
sometimes.
Did.
Yeah. I mean, this guy was a hero, and he does deserve the big clap. It's just so sad. What's so scary about this scenario is that if I was in that cab, I would have made a fatal decision, I think. Not after listening, not we won't now that we've listened to this podcast.
Right.
Well, the reason why that chimney effect took place was because, we're saying, this tunnel did not have the safety measure of doors that would close off in the case of a fire, which that makes perfect sense. I guess when you think about it, as you cut off the oxygen, the fire has nothing to fuel off, to sort of...
That would have been
consume.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know, like, this is the first time I really understand the chimney effect, right? I wouldn't know that going into this, especially if you're just going for a ski.
Yeah.
You think you're just getting on
You're on vacation.
Yeah, your head is not in that space.
Well, and you're taking a shortcut.
I know. Well, let's talk about this. There's a few other things we have to put up on the board. One of them is this.
Should we put the chimney effect in there?
I think the tunnel encompasses the chimney effect.
Of
we
death.
Can call
sure.
it.
Yeah.
Well,
does the conductor go on the board?
Must. The you mean the attendant, right?
The attendant.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I mean, the head of the company or who the head of whatever, right? Like who puts it, like what was the attendant's training and like who puts him in the thing? And if he's just the attendant, then what's he supposed to do? What's his function?
Great question. I don't know what kind of training these attendants got. I think we need to put up the train operators who are the attendant, the suppliers of the train for like what Sarah said, you know, saying just fireproof, it's fine. And the inspectors, who I guess missed that the fire extinguishers were not accessible to the passengers. Huge oversight. Let's talk about these lawless snowboarders. So traditionally, a large snowboard party takes place at Capron during the second week in November to celebrate the start of the winter season. This meant that the town was full of skiers and snowboarders, and there was also going to be a snowboarding competition later that day. Seconds from Disaster, a documentary said, within hours of the accident, based purely on speculation, journalists began publishing theories. The Times of London suggested that snowboarders may have been to blame. Quote, top boarders carry small aerosol sprays to wax their boards, and boarders do not worry over much about the no smoking signs. That communication may have had some contribution to the disaster on Saturday. The paper went on to accuse snowboarders as a group of people the paper seemed to consider synonymous with teenagers. Some snowboarders may have been lighting firecrackers in celebration of opening day of the season. So these initial press reports spoke about snowboarders carrying flammable liquids or fireworks, which were banned. But forensic experts later found no trace of either.
So this is just media snapping judgments?
This was like the first thing that was blamed right after.
That's a bunch of BS if you ask me.
Totally.
Yeah, that's like, if these kids right. weren't on our mountain, we wouldn't have a fire.
Yeah, it's like...
It's convenient. It's like an easy place to put your grief.
Yeah, they're an easy target because snowboarders are definitely cooler than you. Like, because you work at a newspaper or whatever.
They're laid back. They have a reputation of being like Chris.
Yeah.
You know?
They take their board and they just go.
Yep.
Carefree. Don't care about dangers ahead. No. Don't look at signs.
Just throwing firecrackers wherever they can.
On trains.
Yeah.
Snowboarding off the roof.
I'm going to take my aerosol spray and my firecracker and go up this mountain.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
So we can't put them on the board, though,
but
right?
I thought it should have been at least stated. They'll come off right away.
It was sort of part
of the disaster. And finally... I do want to put heaters up on the board. So this is according to Seconds from Disaster documentary. During the train's modernization, the attendants' cabs were made more comfortable. Electric fan heaters were installed to keep the cabs warm during the freezing winter months. When temperatures can plummet to below 20 degrees Celsius, and they're located beneath the control panels where smoke was first spotted. When investigators checked out the manufacturer's instructions for the heaters, they uncovered a terrible oversight. Incredibly, the train's heater is designed for use in the home, not for moving vehicles. Mm. On the sister train, the investigators noticed that the mount for the heating element was broken, meaning it could easily get jammed against its plastic casing and catch fire. Further study proved that 4 out of 5 heaters of this type had the same defect. 4 out of 5 heaters.
I mean, those are some pretty high odds.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. If it's 4 out of 5 here in Vegas, you're betting on black, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel like that is a huge I love that, like, they just threw heaters in there. And as somebody who does not like to be cold, I would absolutely ask for a heater.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sure. This is why when, like, you renovate a house, for example, you can't just, like, do whatever you want. Like, people inspect what you're doing because things that you're installing might actually be a fire hazard or anything.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. I mean...
And that they read the instructions on the heater after this. I mean, this is just this whole thing is a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, there's even more that we could put up on the board.
Well, you should mention this last one, the hydraulic oil.
Yeah,
right?
let's put hydraulic oil up on the board. This is according to Professor Joseph Neges, funicular railway expert. And they say there is no other explanation than that this hydraulic oil originated from the damaged train itself. Hydraulic pipes are often not completely leak-proof, so a small amount of hydraulic oil may have seeped out. Then Seconds from Disaster documentary said the hydraulic system was a new feature installed during the 1993 refit. 120 liters of the flammable hydraulic oil run in pipes along the 61-meter train. The control panel in the guard's compartment houses a hydraulic pressure gauge and oil pipes leading to the gauge pass within just a few centimeters of the faulty heater. Investigators determined that 14 minutes before the disaster, as passengers were entering the train in the empty attendance cab, a dribble of hydraulic oil was dripping down the pipes into the heater, which came on automatically during the station stops. A design fault caused the unit to overheat. Hydraulic oil seeped into the red-hot heater element and fire breaks out unnoticed before the train leaves the station. As the train approached the tunnel, flames from the heater melted the leaking pipes. Oil gushed out of the pipes, soaking the plastic floor. Furthermore, the loss of hydraulic fluid also led to the loss of pressure, causing the hydraulic braking system to automatically engage and halt the train inside the tunnel during its ascent.
So it was the little bit of hydraulic fluid
that fell into
interacting
the
with the heater, the heater, which was sort of not approved for this.
No, just like a rinky-dink home heater.
Home heater.
Which, those are very dangerous. Never sleep with a home heater on, by the way.
Yeah. Yes.
But we know that. Three of now. Us out of the four of us.
Yeah, no, I have no idea. And believe me, I don't
this
care.
This is news to Chris.
We are
over.
Going okay. long.
We are
so
over.
We gotta, so let's give it that ad line and yeah. be super efficient okay. about knocking the board off.
So let's okay. just take a quick pause right now. And then we're going to start knocking things off the list.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, who's to blame for the Capron funicular disaster? Ski fever, lack of safety mechanisms and protocol. Pompeian reassurance, believing nothing can go wrong. Double-paned windows, blackout inside tunnel, ? No cell reception. The tunnel, aka stairway to hell, chimney effect. Train attendant, train suppliers, train inspectors, lawless snowboarders, heaters, or hydraulic oil.
So, good list. I think we can cross those lawless snowboarders off of it ASAP.
Get them out of here. They did nothing wrong. They just want to snowboard.
Along with ski fever.
And we should give the big finger wag to the media who jumped to conclusions.
That's gross.
About the lawless snowboarders.
Yeah. Yeah. So, get them off the board. I also think that the no cell reception, I think,
yes,
knock that off too.
I think you're right. I think that, there should have been more protocols. They shouldn't have been relying on cell phone reception to call anyone.
Right.
So, yeah, that's not. And ski fever as well, Clayton. Let's take that
off. Ski fever?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think double pane windows goes in the same. It's the same as the train suppliers. Like the that feels like the it's one thing, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
I think we can take that off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think we might be able to take out the blackout inside of the tunnel because it goes more. I think lack of safety mechanisms and protocols. Like there should have been lights that turned on.
And that also gets wrapped up into the tunnel itself. I mean, the design and the chimney effect, all that is wrapped into what is this tunnel.
Right,
right.
Which was just sort of poorly constructed and sort of considered.
Yeah.
There's something also to be said about this idea that it was that whoever just said that the train was not going to catch fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, whatever that is. What is that? Is that
that's
is that
snake Pompe- oil salesman? That's
a snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
That's what they say. Is whatever they say.
The salesman.
You know,
they want to make that says.
You haven't bought anything from that salesman?
He's having a says.
He's got to have a says and eat it too. So I also think that, listen, heaters and hydraulic oil were what, like, that's not to blame. That's what happened.
Yes. When you put them together.
That's what caused the fire. That's not the that's not who we blame.
I agree.
It's just like, I knew that in 2000. I knew that you do not, it's 2000 and I knew that you don't sleep with a home heater on. Like, you are very careful. I moved, maybe it was more 2001. I moved to New York in 2001 and I had one of those heaters because I was from Miami and I was very cold and I needed to sleep, you know. And the first thing my mom, and the first thing that was on that thing, on the label for that heater, was don't sleep with this heater. And as much as I wanted to, because I was so cold, I would turn it off at night before I went to bed. So that's 2001.
I'm with you. Listen, I was just a baby in a bassinet. And we know this because we said that earlier. And I remember, because I have a really great memory. I remember my mom saying, "Oh, I should turn the heater off because that'll kill a baby."
Even though you didn't even know words back then, right? But you knew that. You knew mom's turning the heater off.
As a dumb, stupid newborn baby, I knew to turn a heater off.
Oh, it's so upsetting. I can't.
Do we want to wrap up train attendant, train suppliers, and train inspectors into lack of safety mechanisms and protocol? Because this really seems like it goes back to the construction and the concept of the design of funicular
train. Yes. And for
train,
I agree. And for the record, I just want to say that there were 16 people who went to trial for this disaster. You're not going to like what the second part of the sentence is.
Uh-oh.
They were all acquitted.
What?
Well, they're not going to. Well, when it comes to, nobody gets acquitted in the.
Yeah, not
yeah,
here.
Trial of
unless we have a guest expert who later confirms that we made the wrong decision.
Actually, yes,
and then they get acquitted.
There have been many acquittals, actually.
But they still spend some time in jail, wrongly convicted.
I was going to say, I feel like I've heard those episodes.
Where are they going with this?
Well, and for the record, those 16 people were the train attendants, the train suppliers, and train inspectors. That's who that encompassed.
Train suppliers. Sure.
Inspectors and suppliers.
And sort of focusing on the heaters, too.
Yeah.
There was sort of like...
The heaters ended up being...
A sort of central component.
Yeah. So,
did the people who made the heaters get in trouble, or the people who installed the heaters? I mean,
who put those heaters on the train? I mean, who?
Yeah, when they updated the train. I mean, it's just, this is where it seems like there's so many people involved and things going wrong, and that the overarching thing is just like a lack of oversight.
Yeah,
it's like you could blame so many people because they all did one little thing that contributed to a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a big decision here. You know, we have to choose from these three things that are still left on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Who is to blame and who gets the big slap? And what's still left up on the board is lack of safety mechanisms and protocol, Pompeian reassurance, believing nothing can go wrong, and the actual tunnel, a.k.a. the stairway to hell / chimney effect.
This is tricky. This is where anytime I listen to your podcast, I always feel like this is where it gets tricky. And this is where I start talking out loud in my car to you. because we have to talk it out.
Hear you.
Thank you. Also, I just want to say that, if it was between taking this funicular vehicle and what was the other thing, the 13-minute? Whatever.
Oh, the cable car. Yeah.
I also would have gone with this because fun is in the title. You spell funicular with F-U-N. How do you spell fun? Funicular.
Like, get on that fun machine.
That's a good
point.
So
that also goes into my Pompeian reassurance of like, this, you know, it's as fun in the title. It'll be a great time. Like, I do think this is a big one for me.
I also feel like a tunnel, like, again, there's so many tunnels all over the world and all kinds of trains going through these tunnels, right? So it's like, it's hard for me to think that the tunnel is at fault. The tunnel lacked certain safety things.
Yes.
So right. It's like you can't blame the tunnel if someone doesn't build the tunnel right.
I think that's a good point, Clayton, and this is where my head's at. I think that we should send the lack of safety mechanisms and protocols inside this tunnel to the alarmist jail, and I think that we should give the everyone's human Pompeian reassurance a big slap. You know, I think you should believe that everything could go wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's why you have a show.
I think, like, if anything, we've all learned something today. And the big slap is a slap in your face of reality, folks.
That's so true.
I'm canceling my tap dance practice on the roof.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
If there...
For today.
But for today. I do have a fiddle for you that I'd like you to start playing on the roof.
Well, before the show gets started,
yes.
I have to make this call. Pompeian reassurance, believing that nothing can go wrong. You're getting the big slap. Lack of safety mechanisms and protocols in the tunnel. You're going to the alarmist jail. Hopefully we got it right. You know, you just never know with these things. You could suddenly get an expert on the show and, well, everything could change.
It could change in the blink of an eye, which I think is what we did for Chris in this episode, is we've changed his ways. And now he's going to think about it when he goes into a theater.
I've canceled.
That's why we had this episode. This is really, Chris, this is a PSA for you. We did this because we're worried about you and you need help.
Yeah. And if you relate to Chris the most out of the four of us here, know that we're slapping you as well.
Know that you're cool. You are cooler than everybody.
We're slapping you. Cancel that tap rehearsal.
And you may have been homecoming king, but you're getting a slap.
That's right.
Sarah, I have to thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for the Capron funicular disaster.
Disasters are terrifying, but it's been my pleasure and joy to be with you all today. Thank you so much for having me.
After the Capron funicular disaster, several employees of the cable car operator and its manufacturer were charged with criminal negligence after the disaster in Capron. In 2004, all 16 of them were acquitted. Half of them were retried on appeal, but all acquitted once again. In June of 2008, the families of the victims were awarded restitution. But most of the families feel there has never been proper accountability for the tragedy that took their loved ones, citing unfair trials and a corrupt system as roadblocks to meaningful justice. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at The Alarmist The on Twitter, at The Alarmist Podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing who's to blame for the rise and fall of Quibi.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.